Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The proportion of young adults who voted in last year's midterm election was the highest in a century. And analysts are expecting an even higher turnout from young voters in 2020. So to get a sense of what young voters are thinking about politics, we invited three of them into our studio. All are students at UMass Boston. Monica Reyna Gonzalez is a junior, and Opal Polynice and Fareen Khan are both sophomores. And they began by telling us the key issues on their minds. Here's Monica.
The most important political issue for me right now is equity. I feel that this administration, it has highlighted all the inequalities, all the gaps, and all the broken systems that have made our society as unequal and as difficult to navigate as it is right now.
So in your mind, when you say equity, what does that mean?
For me, it doesn't mean giving everybody the same thing. It means giving people what they need to achieve the same opportunities.
Okay, Fareen, how about you? What's the most important issue for you right now?
I think reproductive rights. I think there's an inherent misunderstanding in the American public what the pro-choice movement stands for.
Opal, how about you? What's the most important issue for you?
Well, I'm pretty pro-life, and so the most important issue for me is defending life. And I think there's a lot of misconception about what life is and what that means to be pro-life. And so that's a hot-button issue for me.
So I want to emphasize the women for a minute, because we have three young women on this panel. So what I'd like to do for the next couple of policy questions, I want to take specifically a woman's lens on the policy issues. And let's begin, although it is sensitive, with healthcare and specifically women's reproductive health. Fareen, you touched on the fact that your number one issue was women's reproductive health. So be more specific there. What inside of that concept for you as a young woman in America is important to you?
So I do believe that abortion is a human right. We will never tell a woman that they should get an abortion, but we will say that it's wrong for you to tell another woman that she cannot get an abortion because of your religion. And I think religion should stay out of politics, because religious freedom does not say, oh, you can't do this because my religion says it's wrong. Religious freedom says, this is my experience, this is my personal experience, and I'm not going to do this because my religion feels it's wrong.
Okay, let me turn to Opal now, because Opal, you then said is one of your key issues that you were pro-life, and that was a fundamental issue in this election for you. So especially in response to what you've heard from Fareen, as another young woman in America, why is that important to you, and what does that mean today and in the 2020 election?
I do believe that you don't have the right to take somebody else's life. They call it my right, it's my choice, but that's another life inside of you. I don't see how you have the right to impede on that life, because I don't see the difference between it being a life in your stomach and it being a life outside of the stomach. Like, either way, that's still a human being.
So many women who have struggled with the tension between the law giving woman autonomy to make healthcare decisions about her own body and the concept that a baby in utero is a separate life see some tension between the claims that baby has and the claims a woman has to her own body in making her own healthcare decisions.
Okay.
As a young woman, how do you think about that tension?
I don't see autonomy including you having the right to decide whether a child lives or not. And I kind of want to address how you addressed religion. I don't think we should live in a church state, but I mean, religion has always informed political thought. I don't think it should be a federal mandate that we should provide for reproductive health, because, you know, if it was against my religion.
I can just interject here, I have respect for life in the womb, but if I'm ever in that position and I have to go to a doctor's office, I don't want anyone else making that choice for me. If I have to terminate a pregnancy, that is between me, my God, and my doctor.
Let's move now to the question of immigration. The three of you each have very different lived experiences when it comes to that set of policy issues. Let me just begin by saying, do each of you agree that our current immigration system is broken? I'll start with you, Fareen.
I would say that there's like an inherent, I feel like, racism almost. Broken isn't the term I would use. That gets tossed around a lot. I would say it's more disorganized.
Why do you object to the concept of broken? Because it is a term that gets used a lot. And one might say, well, if it's inherently racist, how is that not broken?
I think you can fix the immigration system. So that's why I would say it's more disorganized than broken.
And do you have in mind one particular fix that you think is essential or would be most helpful?
I'd start by not banning an entire religion, like the Muslim ban that Trump tried to enact. Like, that's a very disorganized policy, and it's inherently discriminatory.
So, Monica, what's your feeling on sort of the health of our current immigration system?
Well, I've had the immense privilege of working in a congressional office as a casework fellow, and a lot of that was doing immigration work, which is write to our agencies and ask for updates or for help navigating the system. I wouldn't say it's broken. It does not work. There are so many channels that don't communicate with each other. There are so many systems and forms that people need to repeatedly fill out. And it's just a system that isn't communicating with itself. So you can be dealing with ICE or you can be dealing with the Visa Center. They're not talking to each other. So your visa can be in the mail on its way to your house, but you can be in a detention center and willingly choose to deport yourself or look at 3 weeks in that center while your parents get your visa to the judge who adjudicates that it is valid. So I'm not getting this information from CNN or the New York Times. I'm getting it from a really personal experience of having to sit down with a lot of people in my communities and in immigrant communities and have to talk them through why they have to fill out 10 different forms from 3 different agencies. I think that if we sit them all together and get them to create channels that talk to each other, processes that are much more simple to navigate, then I think we can fix a really big problem.
Opal, do you think that young people of your generation have a different experience with or understanding of or critique about the way the United States handles immigration?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of it is exacerbated by social media. You know, we watch these now this 1 minute clips on Twitter and we don't really take the time to inform ourselves just how complicated this system is, especially there are a lot of crises going on in other countries now. And so there's a influx of immigrants coming from everywhere. And it's really hard to process this because you really do have to make sure that you're admitting people who are safe to come into the country, because you have a country to protect, right? I'm not anti-immigrant. My parents are immigrants, but I think they're underestimating, you know, how difficult it is to ensure the safety of a country, if that makes sense.
And so you do see questions of border security and national security as tied up in immigration policy?
Absolutely. I think, okay, so I know I'm going to probably receive a lot of flack for this, but I think, for example, the border wall ties into that a lot, and I am actually for the wall.
Either of you opposed to the wall?
Yes. Yes. I think the wall is, I honestly believe it would be a waste of money. They don't seem to understand that people will always find a way around whatever you have.
So you just don't think it would work?
I don't think they would work, and I don't think it's necessary. I think it's a waste of money.
How about you, Monica?
I agree with Fareen. I first want to go back to something that you said, Opal, that I agree with you. I think that a lot of us are being informed by one-minute videos, clickbaits, and hashtags. I think that it takes a lot of self-discipline to take a step away from that and take everything into consideration holistically. But the wall doesn't work. The three of us, our heritage is not from the United States. Our parents or we came from different places, and it wasn't that border that we crossed. So pinpointing the Mexican border as the point of problem is unrealistic, and a concrete structure is also not the most feasible way to secure that border.
So here's what I think I'm hearing from the three of you, that where the common ground is that A, a system that allows for immigration is actually important, and B, that there is some relationship between border security, national security, and immigration. But C, you're not only concerned about equity, but also about efficacy and spending money in the ways that you think will most work across that set of interests. Does that seem fair?
Yeah.
Let's talk about President Trump. most of the conversation about primary season in primary 2020 is about the Democratic primary, where there's been a very wide field. But the Republican incumbent, Donald Trump, is also running for re-election as president of the United States. Are any of the three of you interested in supporting President Trump in the 2020 election?
I am, actually.
So yeah. Talk some more about that, Opal.
Yeah, I can feel the death stares. It's okay.
It's not you, it's him.
Oh, well, I mean, I think, again, there is a lot of misinformation about who he is and what he does. For example, if you look at the Mueller report, right, and the FBI spent, what, $35 million in 2 years trying to find collusion with Russia, and there wasn't any, you know what I'm saying? And he's still just getting hounded and hounded. Like, I mean, I think it is appropriate for him to say it is a witch hunt at this point. I think there are people in certain positions who actively work against him. It bothers me because, I mean, he's not able to deliver on some of the promises that, you know, he made to the American people when he was running in the 2016 election. It bothers me because, you know, when certain people in positions of power did the same thing to Obama, you know what I'm saying? It was called unfair, unjust, and, you know, so why is it any different with him?
So let me ask you one other question. Are you voting for President Trump because it's President Trump? Are you first and foremost voting for President Trump because you're a Republican? Or is there no distinction between those two things?
I think there is a distinction. I think a lot of the Democratic candidates are focused on very, like, policies that are socialistic in nature. I would never vote for somebody who would implement socialist policies because they don't help generate wealth. Only capitalism can do that.
So the three of you are such strong women with such clear ideas and understanding in your own minds of how you want women to be able to navigate the world around them. We are in such an interesting moment for women right now. We're 2 years out of the hashtag MeToo movement launching. Here's what I'm curious about. Do you feel that the emergence of movements like hashtag MeToo have affected the way you can navigate school, work, life, dating, etc.? And do you have any thoughts about or concerns of backlash?
This is Farine. The MeToo movement was to, like, shine a light on sexual assault and how that needs to be addressed. It's not there for men to become resentful of women because suddenly they're unsure of what to say. I really think men don't understand that, like, they can't just ask women. And this doesn't go for just men. This goes for women, too, because the Me Too movement isn't just about women who are victims. Men are victims as well.
Now, Opal, you were specifically nodding at something that Farin said.
I think this might be the one area where we somewhat agree. No, because I mean, it's not fair for people to use the position of power that they're in to manipulate or subject them to inappropriate, you know, forms of intimacy, contact, or anything like that. And so I think that was a very important step for women and people in general. Because I mean, even if you take sexual harassment out of the picture, how are other power plays being made to make people do what you want them to do?
Yeah, it's not just women who are the victims.
Monica,
I tried to think back before Me Too, like, how did we have conversations about the boss who harassed me? Did we? If we had a creepy professor, how would we talk about it before Me Too? I also think that men being uncomfortable with Me Too is a little frustrating. It's just a matter of conversation. We're not attacking anyone, and we're calling out who needs to be called out.
Monica Reyna Gonzalez, Farin Khan, and Opal Polonese, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Boston.
Thank you for having us.
Stay with us. Coming up, why Halloween is an important time in the drag community. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.